Welcome to the Embodiment Conference. This channel, Trauma and Social Change, it's absolutely the moment for that, isn't it? I'm Steve Hoskinson. I'm the founder of Organic Intelligence. I've been teaching in this area of trauma, embodiment, and social change for about 25 years. It's an honor, really, for us to be sponsoring this channel where we're going to hear a multiplicity of voice, all unique contributors to our collective understanding of how to move from trauma and support then social change. Our unique voice in organic intelligence has something to do with a koan that I'd like to present to you, which is trauma means unintegrated resource. And that's a koan, and if you'd like and are feeling intrigued about that riddle, then tune in to the post-trauma system development course that we are offering here. The coupon code that'll get you half off on that is ENJOY. Now, enjoy this next presentation, and we'll look forward to another meaningful time as we explore these topics, trauma and social change. Enjoy.
Welcome, everyone, to this webinar with Heidi Crockett. She's a licensed psychotherapist, body worker, and author of two books. I noticed, Heidi, Caregiver Stress, Neurobiology to the Rescue, and The Neuroscience of Dating. Oh, you'll have to pass that information on to the new Singles Connection site. She is also an educator at True North Health Center, quite a renowned and world-famous health center for integrative medicine in Santa Rosa. She's actually got a nickname. Heidi's called the integrationist or nervous system magician. She teaches embodiment through the science of interpersonal neurobiology, IPNB, which is an interdisciplinary field created by the wonderful Dr. Dan Siegel that looks at consilience. I don't think I've come across that word before. Which is what very different areas of science share in common. So please welcome Heidi and enjoy this webinar with her. If you're familiar with Zoom, you'll know that you won't see your faces, but sometimes it's really wonderful for the presenter to actually see some faces to get that resonance with. So if you're willing to be on the panelists, you won't be on the recording. You'll just be in the sort of main room with Heidi so she can see your face. If you could put your hand up or say yes in the chat room, then great. There's a couple of people already doing that. Fantastic. So Tally will bring you into the main panel room. You'll keep yourself on mute. And if as we go through the webinar, and I'm sure there will be some very interesting things that you will resonate with that Heidi shares, please put those comments in the chat. She'll just pick those up later. If you've got any questions, Heidi's really got so much to share in this session. So she really would like to sort of take the time to do that. But if as we're going through, you've got some Q&A, please put those in the Q&A and she'll make a little bit of time at the end to cover that. So again, thank you, Heidi. Thank you so much. Welcome to the Embodiment Conference. And I look forward to you sharing your magic.
Great. So thanks for the introduction. I have a lot of content I'm going to cover today. I do want to give a heads up to everyone that in about 10 minutes, we're going to do a 10-minute guided meditation. So just people can be prepared for that. If you want to make sure that you're in a space that's distraction-free for that meditation. So I teach, it's called interpersonal or relational neurobiology or neuroscience. And some of you have heard Dan Siegel speak, and I'm passionate about it because I believe that interpersonal neurobiology is for the mind what embodiment is for the body. Specifically, we're kind of like the left hemisphere is a little bit like interpersonal neurobiology, and the right hemisphere is a little bit like the body. So we're going to have different kind of overlaps as we talk. And if there's anyone in the room and they like to go to all the lectures with information, then those people tend to be a little bit more preference to their left hemisphere. And if the people are going to like the yoga and the dance and they tend to get overwhelmed with information, then they're going to be a little more preference for the right hemisphere. And there's not a problem with either hemisphere. They're like two legs that you want to be able to dance smoothly with. You don't want to have one more dominant than the other. And in that sense, you want the corpus callosum to be robust and thick. Just like, you know, the pelvis kind of connects the left and the right hemisphere. So that's just an example. And when we have trauma, it shrinks the corpus callosum. So today I'm going to be talking about things you can do to grow the integrated fibers of your brain, like the corpus callosum, and there's a couple other areas. So I'm really excited. I'm going to rush through some of the talk so I can get to the trauma and how to resolve trauma at the end quicker, because I'm kind of covering like four big topics in a short period of time. I'm describing the left hemisphere's mode of processing and the right hemisphere's mode of processing, which are happening all the time. And so that's going to take a little bit of time. And then I'm going to just do a couple core neurobiology principles. Then I'm going to talk about what happens when there's trauma in the brain. And then I'm going to talk about how to resolve it. So there we go. Each of those segments is going to be about 10 minutes. And so I'm going to start with the PowerPoint. Here's a quote. We're just looking at the left hemisphere and the right hemisphere. These are just some descriptions of it. The left hemisphere is more exteriorly focused. So I'm going to mirror you all, so because I'm going to mirror. So the left hemisphere is exteriorly focused and the right hemisphere is interiorly focused. The right hemisphere is more about body sensations, and the left hemisphere, it's the narrator. It's one step removed. And as you grow from a baby into like a 4 or 5 year old, ideally you would begin to develop what's called self-talk, which is that narrator coming on board, and it's excellent. So what we want to see developmentally is that you're just going back and forth between the two hemispheres, and you're not getting the gears getting clunky, the shifting of gears. And what happens when you have a moment of overwhelm, where you're exteriorly focused in your environment, but a caregiver is unavailable to you, whether it's terrifying or emotionally empty, it just overwhelms, it floods your brain. And then the integrated fibers of your brain, like the corpus callosum, they shut their doors. And the message I'm going to give today is that it's really the fibers in the corpus callosum, and it's within the right hemisphere where a lot of the unconscious, unprocessed affect lives. And when we begin to know that that's where it is, there are ways that we can work with it, and we can notice when there's trauma, the person tends to be a little bit right hemisphere dominant or a little bit left hemisphere dominant, and you see that in the behavior. So for example, if someone has an avoidant attachment style, they tend to be a little bit left hemisphere dominant. And if they are ambivalent attachment style, they tend to be a little bit more right hemisphere dominant. So, and there are exercises that you can give yourself, I'm gonna try and go into those, to balance yourself out. So that was just an introduction to everyone as we hop into this. So I wanted to give an introduction to Dan Siegel, and I wanted people to know what is interpersonal neurobiology and why is it important? So the basis of it is the mind, the brain, and relationships. And I'm gonna go back 4 decades to when Dan Siegel, the creator, was in his first year of med school and why this field got created. The intention of this field was to have one field of science bring different areas together and to create a framework which included the mind. And what happened when he was a first year student is he was studying salmon, freshwater salmon, and how they had an enzyme, which was an extraordinary evolutionary development. They were able to go from freshwater to salt water. And it was just this incredible discovery that everyone paid attention to. And so at the same time at night, he was working in a suicide hotline. And for him, the tone of his voice and the quality of the connection would mean the difference between life and death. So for him, the mind was just as important as that enzyme in the salmon. But when he was in med school, what was happening is that his teachers were just, he said it was so painful for him. The patients were treated like bags of chemicals and sacks with skin, and the students were treated as repositories of data. So there was just this real cold, a lack of this resonance that we're talking about today, happening at the level of relationships. And he was so disillusioned that he left for a year, and then he came back, and they say the rest is history. And he developed this whole field so that the mind could have a place in the academic platform to talk about relating. And it's important in this framework, the mind is an embodied and relational process that regulates energy and information flow. And the main thing about the mind is it's a process, it's ongoing, and it's more than the brain. So what it does is it opens a door for people to think of the brain and the relationships differently. Like they used to think the brain was just encased in the skull. But now we know, like with mirror neurons, that the mind is embodied and relational. So his mission was to create something where the mind had a definition, and that because the mind is more than the brain, we can use it to improve relationships and to change the brain, which is what neuroplasticity is all about. And we can optimize the mind in interpersonal neurobiology, just like embodiment optimizes the body, and the two really are mirrors to each other. So I wanted to bring that in and tell people that we have this triangle. It's like a steering wheel on a boat going down a river of neural integration. And as we travel down this river, which is like your window of tolerance, if you've heard him talk, there's rigidity and chaos, but there's these different categories in which we can integrate the brain. They're progressive, and there are nine of them. I'm not going to go into them in detail, but today I'm talking about the second domain, which is the left and the right hemisphere. So this is just the developing mind. It's shaped by social interactions that mold the integrated connections in the brain. So these are so interrelated. What it does is, what he says is that the end of, once you get through all nine domains, you get the mui, is what he calls it. The me plus we equals mui. And the lines begin to blur on where you begin and other people, where you end and other people begin. And we see people with higher levels of integration, they feel more a connectedness with all life, and they have higher levels of altruism. And you see kindness is integration made visible. So that's just a little bit about the background, how interpersonal neurobiology is for the mind, embodiment is for the body. And I'm gonna talk about trauma being basically the opposite of integration. So integration is what your body and brain does all on its own, given the right environment. And then dissociation is the opposite of integration. It's actually the blocking of integration of the nervous system. So that's the framework we're coming from. Trauma specifically is the moment of the blocking, in my opinion. And so here I use this quote, it's the moments that have not been resonated with yet. And so that's what we're gonna work on today. And you've seen that with Gabor Mate's Compassion Inquiry, even with Tara Brach's RAIN, the Recognize, Allow, Investigate, and Nurture. What they're doing is the principles I'm going to be talking about today. So I'm just going to jump to the conclusion real quick. The two tools that are going to help you are choice and connection. Choice is internal, where you self-regulate. Connection is where you are external and you co-regulate. And they are the two things that we need to pull ourselves up kind of on the monkey bars or this ladder where we're in social engagement and where we go from the lizard brain to the wizard brain. That's so what we're doing when we're in trauma is that we're frozen. We're in that fight, flight, freeze, and it gets stuck in our body in feedback loops. So I see it as a matter of getting enough love food or resonance that you can grow your resiliency to climb up the ladder yourself to more social engagement. And the way we learn to self-regulate is by being successfully co-regulated when we are younger. So if there's anyone listening who has a lot of trauma history, it's safer to begin with co-regulating first. Then you can move to self-regulating. And so I would change this quote and just say, trauma is the parts that haven't been resonated with yet. Because we all have access to a healthy social engagement system. We all have a dorsal and ventral vagus nerve. We all have the capacity to find kindness and what's called the soothing system and give ourselves care and wire up our brain. Even if we didn't have our brain wired up when we were a kid, we can do that, learning to do it to ourselves and doing it with other people who care about us. That's the hope for everyone. So there's something called interpersonal resonance and co-regulation. It's just where we literally align our states and vibrate. I was seeing that Gil Headley's talk. He was talking about the fuzz, and he was saying that fascia in our body actually vibrates. He had a tuning fork, and this resonance, it does. It goes from when I'm going to talk about how the right hemisphere does nonverbal body language, like eye contact and intensity of voice and different things. And when that happens, you're actually reading that what's happening inside another person's body, and it's coming into you, into your resonance circuits, your mirror neuron system. It's going into your brain, down through your limbic brain, your brainstem to your body. You're getting that resonance. And then it's going up through it's called the social circuits into the prefrontal cortex. And you're doing this interpersonal resonance or this co-regulation if the brain is wired up. If it's not wired up, that process of taking in the process I just described, it gets impaired because of the lack of integration somewhere in the brain, specifically usually the integrative fibers like the corpus callosum. There's something called the prefrontal cortex and the hippocampus. Those are the three kind of most integrative areas I'm going to mention today. They're called the regulatory circuits. So we're going to go through four levels. Like I said, we're going to go through some really quickly. I'm going to tell you a little about the hemispheres, then we're going to go straight into meditation. I'm going to tell you two things about interpersonal neurobiology, what happens in the brain. I've kind of already said it. And then I'm going to tell you how to heal it, specifically focusing on the science of memory reconsolidation when we get to level four. And for people who are listening, if there's not time, I'm going to do a Q&A immediately afterwards. I'll have a Zoom room for people because I know I'm not going to have time to do Q&A. And I'll record that, and you can email me if you want access to that. So the science on the two hemispheres, I'm amazed that in this whole conference, I really have seen almost no one. I may be the only one talking about the difference between the two hemispheres. And it is really fundamental to embodiment, to understand the difference between the two hemispheres. And what's happened is they've been really not looked at in the last 20 years because of kind of more sophisticated MRIs and the way they're working. So you see here, there's a really 300 million year old asymmetry. What will happen in the brain is that, I'm just going to read what this says, you know, the left gets active and it wants to shut down the equivalent on the right. So it could be doing things to balance out the right. So the MRIs look like there's two things going on in each hemisphere, but they're not the same. So when I'm talking, if anyone wants to teach on this subject or talk about this subject in a way that aligns with the science, we're going to talk about being, a way of being or a mode of processing when we're talking about the left hemisphere and the right hemisphere. We're not talking about specific actions because the brain really, the two hemispheres tend to work together. And most of what the brain does is bring everything together. But what can happen is as it's collecting the data and then ta-da, getting its final product, it'll tend to lean in on one side versus the other to the detriment because it's usually not accessing certain resources that are available from one hemisphere or the other. So I'm just going to go through real quick the two hemispheres and go to the meditation just in the interest of time. So there's two modes of processing. Like dancing, you need both legs. Left hemisphere is very logical and literal. Uses language, it's called text. you know, versus the right hemisphere is about context. And the most important thing is this narrator. It's one step removed. When you look at this puzzle and you try and answer it, when you break things down into parts, that's left hemisphere. And then the right hemisphere has language. This is why we have to be careful about the words we use. But it's more like poetry and fresh metaphor. When I was talking about the salmon earlier on, that was as a metaphor, that enzyme as a metaphor for the power of the mind. That was to more get the people a little more right hemisphere kind of on board with learning more about interpersonal neurobiology. Stories are a way to integrate the teaching process. So for the right hemisphere, I just want everyone to do an activity with me where you do eye contact. So just repeat after me, eye contact. Good. Facial expression. You can stick out your tongue. Tone of voice. Tone of voice. Then we have posture. Stand up. Posture. And then we have intensity. Intensity. And then we have gesture. So we're going to do a superhero pose. Gesture, gesture. And then the last one is going to be timing, timing. So all those are examples of nonverbal communication that really we're looking at more from a right hemisphere. And when I was talking about that pattern of resonance that happens, that really is kind of a right hemisphere to right hemisphere communication that's going on. So it's nonverbal. It's more about the context. It's more about body sensations. Your right hemisphere is interiorly focused. We're just going to do a real quick, and this is the corpus callosum if you look on the red. So we're going to do a quick meditation. If everyone can get in a comfortable position. So if you can just allow yourself to imagine that you're going to go on a journey where you're going to experience in your body some of the concepts that I've just said. So get yourself in a comfortable position and relax your body and let gravity hold you. And when you're ready, go ahead and let your eyelids gently close and set an intention that what you're about to do is important. And you're going to begin with curiosity and a relaxed and focused awareness for the next few minutes. So move your awareness to your head. And if you're comfortable, go ahead and put your hands on your head. And imagine or just feel the 3-pound organ called brain. So begin to notice the sensations. Notice where your hand makes contact with the head. You may become aware of your beating heart or the quality of your breathing. So you're going to say hello to your whole brain. What we're going to do is we're going to focus on the left hemisphere. Go ahead and lower your other hand. Just have one hand on your left hemisphere. And just say, hello, left hemisphere. I know that you have a way of being in the world. And I'm curious. And I want to know more about you. So I'm going to ask some questions, and you're going to imagine that you can actually feel the neurons firing and that they're coming from this side of your head. Do you like to make lists? If you like to make lists, you probably really love this side of your brain. what is the capital of France? Go ahead and say that aloud. What is the name of the country you live in? Why are you doing this meditation? Your left hemisphere collects facts and it uses language to put them in lists and to follow rules. It asks why and creates categories, and it's focused exteriorly. It likes more mechanical things. Its mode of processing is more linear and logical, and it's a part of you that's like a wheel constantly turning that you can have access to at any time. Thank it for everything it does for you. Now we're slowly going to put our hand on our right hemisphere. And you're going to say, hello. I'm curious and I want to know more about you. Bringing your awareness to the body, to your whole body, the whole body, either lying or sitting on the floor. Notice how your whole body feels in relation to the room. What sensations do you notice at this time? Bring your awareness to your skin and where it makes contact with the floor or your clothing or another surface. Is it hot or cold? Is it rough or smooth? Just noticing. Your right hemisphere is focused interiorly. It has the language of poetry and emotions. And you experience it first as sensations in your body. It notices the context. It notices smiling faces. It notices you related to the whole room. It notices whether your experience of this meditation right now is pleasant or unpleasant. So slowly you can lower your hand. And you can put your two fingers gently in your ear, and you can make a humming noise like this. Just try that one more time, and imagine when you do it now that you can hum into your corpus callosum. Go ahead and take a deep breath in. And when you breathe out, blow kindness into the center of your head where the corpus callosum is. And we're going to imagine that there's a light there, just breathing in kindness and blowing it into the center of your head. One more time, breathing in and breathing into the center of your head. And as we slowly come back into the room and the meditation comes to a close, you can continue to do this where you breathe in through your nose, kindness, and you breathe out into the center of your head with a long exhale, just continuing to breathe that way, breathing in and out. So when you're ready, you can slowly open your eyes and come back to the presentation. So bilateral integration is when you have the feelings that come up as body affect, and it travels through the corpus callosum, through the narrator, and you can describe what's happening. You're having an integration between the right hemisphere's skills and the left hemisphere's skills. And the more you're able to do that, you're able to calm your affect. You're able to calm yourself down. This is really crucial. This is why I think EMDR is so effective as a modality, because I think it helps with the corpus callosum. And because these domains are progressive, bilateral is the second. If you have deficits at this second level, when you go into the third, the fourth, and the fifth, they'll follow you as you go. So if you're like working with me, you want to start with the first few domains and make sure you don't have big deficits there, because actually you can get major leaps in functioning if you just auto-correct, if you just do little shifts to help the differentiation and linkage. So basically what happens sometimes is people adapt and they become too much one way, too much the other way. And we want to be both. You want to be able to have both. And the key is that you respect differences. It's called differentiation. That you cultivate collaborative connections. That's called linkage. So these are huge words. You've probably heard Dan Siegel say this: differentiation and linkage. It means integration. So we're going to go into that right now. Two core principles. One is that when you differentiate and link, you become integrated, and that health is the definition of integration. So that would be the framework that we're looking at. And for me personally, when a person becomes more integrated, they become more embodied. So to me, they're interchangeable. That's a technical definition. The easy and reciprocal flow between differentiated and linked brain systems. So besides the second hemisphere, the second domain, which we're focusing on today, there are 9 total. And the main thing I wanted to point out about the 9 is this is the first domain. The quote says here, the eye of consciousness is the same eye that sees God. And just to briefly touch on consciousness, which is like the pupil in this model, if you can just put your hand in front of you and look at it and focus on your hand, and then you can lower it and you can just look around the room. Look at the four corners of the room. And when you looked at the room, it's called knowing. And when you look at your hand, it's called the known. And to have your subjective experience of awareness, which is consciousness, to integrate the knowing and the known is the first level of consciousness. And in order to do these 7 around it, we have to first be able to do that. And all these other 7 that we're talking about are differentiating, linking different functions, and they're all processes. So memory is ongoing. We're always making new memories. And there's 2 parts to memory. There's the remembered self, like the memory itself. Then there's the remembering self. And this is memory as retrieval and memory as modifier. And these both coexist at the same time, just like the 2 hemispheres coexist. And the third domain is vertical integration. and you've got like the sympathetic and the parasympathetic nervous system. And these are like simultaneous processes, and your body is sort of always managing them. So the purpose in mentioning this is once we begin to understand that all of these are processes, like your relationships, you're always in a process of connecting and being independent, you know, and there's always a difference between you and the other person. So you're always sort of navigating all these processes. And if you ever feel stuck at any moment in time, because the mind is an embodied and relational process, it's liberating. It's a place for freedom. If you feel stuck, there are more things happening simultaneously than you're aware of. And if you can pause and be curious, there may be more information there that could help liberate you and help you feel unstuck. So these processes are differentiating and linking. And we're always kind of looking at this kind of steering wheel on this boat of mind, brain, and relationships. And we look at it in each of these categories. So just for everyone, neurobiology may seem like a really complicated field, but it's not once you understand that the basis of it is this triangle. And then we're looking at these different categories and ways that we can more expertly differentiate and link. That seriously is the whole framework. And it is really empowering once you understand the basics of it, which is that we differentiate first and then we link to get to a higher level of integration. So those are core principles. How does trauma impact the hemispheres? We're not being resonated with. Here you can see how abuse causes the negatively impact the development of the corpus callosum. When you have physical pain or when you have relational pain, it looks similar in the location of the brain. And one of those studies was when someone was stabbed by a knife, it lights up in the same area as rejection. And so this is how people have heard this before, but how we relate to people, especially bullying, will wire the brain up in ways that causes the brain to change. So these nonverbal things, these behaviors are physical things, especially as we understand it within this framework. And by giving them a body, a reality, even if they're sort of invisible, just the words traveling from another person to you, it's having a real actual resulting impact. Whenever anyone is in a situation that's unsafe, we have to get them out of that situation so they can get more into social engagement. And that is the process of recovering from trauma, is getting yourself in enough of a resourced state that you can stay up your ladder. So this is what happens in the brain. When you're a baby and you start seeing your mom, you look at what she's doing and she mirrors you. Are you playing with the trucks? You know, are you going and are you going to eat that little cracker? You know, she's like playing with you and she's looking internally. It's called reflective function, about what you're thinking and doing. And you begin to do that. She's co-regulating and she's mirroring this higher skill called mind sight, where you see your own mind, which is insight, or you see other people's mind, which is empathy. Insight and empathy are mind sight. But when you're in emotionally empty or emotionally terrorizing situations, you stop that because it's not smart to engage in it. And I have a video that I'm gonna show now. And when you watch this video, it's just a minute long and some of it repeats. This is what your corpus callosum does. And as you hear the video and see what happens, imagine kindness, like that white light in the middle of your head, going at your corpus callosum and protecting you. Every time there was something disturbing, your corpus callosum protected you and it froze up within the corpus callosum and within the right hemisphere. So can we go ahead and show the video? I'm gonna stop my screen share.
Go back to the shadow. You shall not.
Thank you so much for being willing to show that video. Everyone, you can come back into the room. And that's what your corpus callosum did. It was like the bone that broke. It was where the breakage happened. It bore the brunt of the direct pain of the outside world, and it protected you. So whenever you have moments of shame or dissociation, what we can do is we can be curious about these like kind of little glitches happening in your brain. Curious because it's a reflection of pattern matching that's repeating itself and looping in your brain. You're not like, I'm suddenly gonna stop integrating in my brain. It's when you go into those states, they're unconscious. So part of the work that I teach people is that we go in there. It's kind of like parts work, like internal family systems, or even with Gabor Mate. The key is that you go in there with kindness. So what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna actually share the screen again and go back to the PowerPoint. So it's not just the corpus callosum, it's the prefrontal cortex and the hippocampus that they connect widely separated areas to each other. So it's really valuable real estate in your brain. And this is just something to meditate on. This is where your prefrontal cortex is. It's a series of structures around this area. I'm not gonna get too technical today. So we got the prefrontal cortex and the hippocampus where explicit memory is. And then you've got the corpus callosum, you can see, like you saw before. So those are areas that you can think about or meditate on or send loving kindness to, because the more integrated they become, the more embodied you're gonna be. And the way we integrate them is by promoting interoception, like that right hemisphere awareness of our body sensations, and promoting that resonance and that empathy. And in studies, interoception or awareness of body sensation is correlated to empathy. So they're just so intricately connected. And this slide is kind of too technical, I'm just gonna skip it. But what happens is we get blockage in these integrated fibers, not just the corpus callosum, but in the hippocampus and the prefrontal cortex too. And you can see this with the right hemisphere and the left hemisphere. It's just certain memory, explicit memory, which is like the photo album of your life. It doesn't get stored. If you're around someone who has really, really high levels of affect, like someone borderline who has rages, when they're in high levels of affect, they're oftentimes in their amygdala is going off and they're not actually in explicit memory. So those high arousal states, that person will not actually even remember what they did, because they're not able to lay down the train tracks to get to explicit memory. So that's another reason that if you're around anyone who has rages, who has really strong emotions, you really wanna remember that how rejection is the same as physical pain. You really wanna get yourself away from that to protect your own brain and begin to get a place of safety. So I know we've got about 9 minutes, and this is the most important part to me of the whole presentation. How you relate interpersonally has everything to do with how you relate intrapersonally. And this is kind of the fundamental, I said choice and connection, I said self-regulation and co-regulation. You have something called the 9 functions of the prefrontal cortex, which are just executive function or higher reasoning. And the way you grow them, according to research, is meditation and having securely attached relationships. So you see over and over in this neurobiology framework that you wire up your brain right by knowing you have choice and agency and learning how to self-regulate and create what's called the compassionate other, where you learn to give yourself kindness, and then you have connection with others, you have a feeling of belonging, and you co-regulate, self-regulating, co-regulating. That's my main message. And you are able to do both of these by having mindsight, by having insight and empathy. So being attuned internally and attuned interpersonally They both involve the social circuits that are also part of the circuitry underlying consciousness. So just kind of getting to the best part, we want the intelligent application of kindness. And in my opinion, anyone who has successful results with whatever modality they use, they're incorporating some form of differentiation and linkage, and they're getting the person into a really relaxed parasympathetic state where they've got oxytocin surging through their body, because you can't have neuroplasticity happen unless you have oxytocin. So whatever it is, whether it's like a soothing voice or people thinking about cues of safety, you begin with kindness, you get the person feeling connected. In a way, you're healing their attachment. And then there's one other thing that we do to heal it, which is this science, I call it renegotiating memory. So we need connection to heal us up. And this idea is this ladder of social engagement. So before you go into like a sympathetic, where you fight, flight, freeze, before you do that, milliseconds before the seconds, there's something called the ventral vagus nerve and social engagement. And this chipmunk is an example. It lets out a high squeak, inaudible by reptiles, but the mom can hear it and she'll come and soothe the chipmunk. So there's this system, and this is the system that's like the secret sauce that's going to help wire up the brain, right? And this demonstrates that this slide more than any other slide I've come across. When people have a lot of threat, their body has a lot of cortisol. And then oftentimes what happens is they're taught the drive system. You got to do something to make it better. And a lot of people who overwork or any addiction at all is a dopamine driven brain. And people will end up in this cycle of dopamine and cortisol until they begin to learn that care is something that you do, that providing care, giving care is an action that's just as important as doing things. And I like this chart because it helps legitimize a rest and relaxation, to think of it as soothing, strengthening the soothing system. So in order to heal the trauma, a person needs to have a strong soothing system. And this researcher says that our mother lives in every cell of our prefrontal cortex. So this is this nurturing, this co-regulation, and this kindness, and this capacity to self-regulate and to co-regulate. It's all in this soothing system. And that's why integration, kindness is integration made visible. The more you have the soothing system strong, the more you can then go in and tinker with memory as a modifier and a retrieval, and you can play the harp strings of your nervous system, and you can actually, you have a twang of a bad memory, and you can actually smooth that note out and make your nervous system hum again to the healthy, healthy hum it was destined to have with the science of memory reconsolidation. So I'm gonna come back to that. We can use memory as retrieval and modifier. And this is the most important thing that I feel like needs to be communicated to therapists more. And I have classes on this. Please email me. And if you need the class for free, just let me know. Just email me. This is my most important thing, the memory reconsolidation. So I'm just going to explain it briefly to people. What it does is it nullifies the charge of a memory where that happened with Gandalf. Any of those bad memories like that, where there's a charge that lives on, you what happens is you get the person really resourced, and then you bring in what was missing. And I'll just name an example of that. When Gabor Mate was asking Mark about when he was 4, he brought in his niece, and he didn't complete a whole memory reconsolidation session, but that's an example of a new meaning experience. And memory is all about one moment in time and another moment in time, and it's called dual focus of awareness. So when you have that co-regulation and you go back in time and you give yourself what you didn't have back then, which is a much longer process than the 5 minutes that Mate had with Mark, but if any therapy is successful, it's because in the process, they're applying kindness and they're creating a new meaning experience. And what it does is it nullifies the charge of the memory. So, and I was just going to say the other thing, when I'm talking about this ladder during this whole talk, this is what I'm talking about. There's safety, there's danger, and then there's something called dorsal vagal collapse, or just life threat. And when in life, we see cues of danger, but we have to learn how to see cues of safety. And an example of that, if anyone watched Bessel's, von der Kolk's presentation, where he showed some videos that were very hard for some people to watch, and other people were therapists and they were kind of used to seeing it. And I was in the coffee break room afterwards, and some people were bothered and some people weren't. And I would say some people's brains, especially traumatized brains, Bessel was talking about that, they're trained to extra notice cues of danger. So part of retraining our brain is to start seeing cues of safety. And I have handouts to practice training your brain to see cues of safety. And that's another way that we strengthen the soothing system. So I know I've got about 2 minutes left. The other thing I was gonna say, besides strengthening the soothing system, the basics of interpersonal neurobiology is that you differentiate and link. So if we're talking about this hemisphere, we're gonna strengthen the capacities, the faculties of each one. If someone were to come in my office and I were to say, what's it feel like, your body right now? And they were just to look at me and say, I don't know what you mean. And they speak English. I might, if I was working with them, I might ask if they're open to the idea that they might be left hemisphere overly focused. They might be underutilizing the right hemisphere. And would they be willing to do some exercises with me? And I might, make some silly faces. You guys can do it with me, and then do that eye contact and intensity, and that's called pantomiming. And you can give them homework when they go home to turn off the volume on TV and to begin to watch the body language of people. So that there's things you can do depending on if someone's preferring one hemisphere over the other. That's just like one example. And then once you get each hemisphere's skills up and running, it's got a nice hum, then you get the left and the right mode together, a type of resonance that is nonverbal. So that's as good as I can get. The things you can do to integrate your brain is journal writing. I didn't have the quote here. It improves immunity and it improves PTSD. It's so confirmed by research that journal writing helps. It's called the Pennebaker paradigm. And you can write down what you think is going on in the feelings of another person, because writing it down and thinking about feelings uses both hemispheres, asking what does it mean, and kindness meditation grows the corpus callosum. So I have a lot of resources I want to send people, but just email me. And I'm really into education. I want to help people as much as I can. So just reach out to me and I will give you those resources. So I will stop. I know that was a lot of information, and see what kinds of questions people want to ask me.
Wow, that was Heidi. Wow, it's like, oh, I got to take a breath. You had a couple of slides there somewhere about breathing. And I thought, oh yes, I need it after all those. Just, I get your absolute passion of just how passionately you want to impart this information. So please make sure before we go on to anything else, if you want to go to the follow-on session, it's been posted in the chat. At least if you can't cut and paste the link and take it into somewhere, write down the the meeting, Zoom meeting number, because clearly it's like, oh my God, it feels like you're just sort of getting started. So you've got worksheets, you run classes. So all of that can be sent out from the, if we can contact you. Yeah, wow. Exactly. All that can be sent out from your email address. Heidi, we're really close to time. So I'm going to actually suggest that everybody email their questions, if that's okay. I just need to cover some things. And then we actually need to, because we need to honor the timing, the whole shebang works, because we do that. So let me do what we need to do and speak to the links. If there is a last minute moment at the end there, we'll cover it then, everyone. So I'm just going to speak to the links and everything, Heidi, and then I'm going to come back to you for the last word and for you to share. Good luck with that. Something out there, your top tip or your top giveaway, because it's like, holy bajoli, you know, like the list must be that long. Your grasp of neuroscience is like really, you've digested it and you're just putting it out there. It's really remarkable. So I'll come back and thank you in a second. But before we go, make sure you take those Zoom links. You can also go in the chat box. You can go to the, you can watch this again for free for the next 48 hours. It will be available free. You can watch the Facebook Live, or you can go to the Embodiment Conference for 48 hours. You can share it with friends. Remember, that Zoom link is going to give you a 3-hour follow-up class. That's no cost. That's a gift, Heidi.
Yes, yeah, part of the bonus package if people do the $3.99. I gave my 3-hour class. Yeah.
Okay. So just be mindful that that is part of the bonus package. So that is the thing that I did want to say, that what makes this possible, apart from the sponsors, is the purchase of the library. So if you're in a position to contribute, to gift, to the Embodiment Conference, please consider that. I see it as the more and more presentations I see, Heidi's is a good example. I see it as a personal development resource library, professional and personal. So you'll have lifetime access. So the 3-hour follow-up, I think, is if you have purchased the library, but we'll just check on those details. Follow that link and it will let you know whether you go in or not. But email Heidi, and you have online courses, etc. Heidi. Okay, so I'm covered. So it's up to you.
Yeah, I have 25-hour class where I go through all 9 domains. So I've taught all this information and I have it recorded. So do you want me to do my top tip now?
Yeah, you've actually got 1 minute. So just go for it, gal, whatever you want.
Yeah, what I would say is, if people remember at the beginning when I talked about the enzyme, that special evolutionary development where that freshwater salmon had an enzyme that made it be able to go into salt water, that for you, the mind is that enzyme when you can focus it, and when you have choice, which is self-regulation, and when you have connection, which is co-regulation, you can access an extraordinary state of being a human being, which is your birthright to have an integrated brain. So that's my tip. My final tip.
Fantastic. That's wonderful. That's tremendous. We can go to, anyway, I was thinking of the analogy with the salmon. So everything's in the chat room, guys. You can go there. So those classes, they're 25 classes. So they're actually ones that you can purchase and do at your own pace.
Yeah, I have 25 hours recorded of 9 domains. Amazing. Yeah, and I'm going to be doing a Q&A after this that I'm going to record that people can email me to get. So I'm going to try and answer some questions. I know we ran out of time here.
Great. Okay, Fanta. And where can they go? And the Q&A is in the coffee chat room after here, or on that?
I gave Zoom the link. Zoom link. It's in, you have to look in the chat. Yeah.
Okay. So just Q&A is available by attending. So clicking. So we're about to close now. It's a wrap. Thank you so much. That was absolutely tops, fabulous, wonderful. Loved it, Heidi. Loved your passion and energy for it. You want to just give so much value in there. So you can click this because you can go straight there to the Q&A.
Okay,
so
great.
There are other seminars, webinars, follow on. Check the schedule, go to the Embodiment Conference, and we'll see you at the next exciting episode of the Embodiment Conference. Thank you so much, Heidi. Brilliant.
Thank you.
Click this link, guys.
Okay.
Go to the Q&A. I'm sure it'll be gold. Mm-hmm.